Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome back to part two of our episode on the Belvedere, which also turned into an episode on buried cars and on time capsules, which are Scott and I's new favorite thing.
Yeah, and this episode is going to have a little bit of everything. I mean, there are cars, there are time capsules, there's unusual items, there's lost time capsules that we'll talk about, which you could still find out there if you have that kind of adventurous spirit.
Well, yeah. By the way, if you have not listened to part one of this episode, go ahead and check that out before you check this one out, because it is just lousy with spoilers.
It's got all kinds of information about the Belvedere that was buried famously, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or infamously at this point.
Yeah,
right?
There at the Tulsa-Rama.
Exactly right. And the resulting mess that came from that whole thing, and where the car is now, who owns it, all that stuff is there. So there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of articles that I feel like our listeners would be interested in reading as well. A simple online search, a Google keyword search, will turn up so much information about this, because when this thing came out of the ground, it was big news. It was big news about a week before it was to come out of the ground, and then, of course, about a week later for a completely different reason.
So what we would like to do is to tell you about a few other time capsules that you may not have heard of.
Yeah, that's right, because there are, my friends, other buried vehicles that are still out there, still waiting to be unearthed. And there's a couple of them. There's maybe two or three that I want to mention here in the end, but there's so much other stuff happening as well that I feel like it's valuable just to mention some of the other things that are going on, because there are articles, if you search for amazing time capsules or something like that, you're going to find them on sites like Gizmodo or Mental Floss.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find all kinds of fascinating things that you had no idea were buried all around maybe the city that you live in, the state that you live in, wherever. They're all over the place. And one that caught my eye was George Lucas had buried a time capsule. He buried it on his Skywalker Ranch back in 1997, I think, is right around when he did it. Now, he says he doesn't even know all the things that are inside this time capsule. He just doesn't remember. But a lot of the stuff he mentioned in an interview with I think it's called Wired magazine.
Uh-huh, yeah.
A lot of the stuff is like artifacts from Star Wars and from the company itself. So there could be some very valuable, very interesting things in there that, George Lucas himself owned and has for some reason decided these were a good thing to put away.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. You got to wonder what's going to be in there, like a working TIE fighter, maybe?
Maybe. And how big is this thing? It doesn't say anything about size. It doesn't say when this thing is going to be unearthed.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like that. A lot of these will tell you when they're supposed to be dug up. Like there's one from the University of Pennsylvania. It was buried in 1940, and it's scheduled to be opened in 2040. And, people kind of, maintain records for these things, as we'll talk about later.
Yes.
But it's scheduled to be opened in 2040. And the time capsule itself weighs 450 pounds. It contains a speech that President Franklin D. Roosevelt made while he was at the school. And it's unclear what else is in there. So, there's all kinds of speculation as to what could be in some of these time capsules.
Yeah, and don't be fooled by the phrase time capsule, because it's a bit of a misnomer. It's just that time vault sounds weird.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So that's why it's a capsule. But these could be of any size. And one thing that happens, let's just get into this, because you talked about the importance of keeping records.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's no better way to prove how invaluable that is other than talking about some of the time capsules that we lost.
Oh, yes, that's right. Now, we'll jump back and forth between lists here, but you've got a very intriguing list in front of you as well, and it is it's about lost time capsules. Now, people know that they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they buried something, say, in 1976, as a lot of people did for whatever reason. It was the bicentennial of the country, so they thought, well, what better time to do this, and we're going to have it opened in 100 years or in 50 years
or
whatever.
Yeah.
But along the way, a new building is built on the grounds, or, maybe a new road goes through. Or there's a plumbing issue like what happened in Tulsa.
Yeah, with the Belvedere.
Yeah, exactly right. Or, the keeper of the records is just gone. They either passed away, they've moved on to somewhere else, they never really clearly laid out where that time capsule was buried. It was kind of all kept, almost a secret, but not really a secret, because it was a public burial. But everybody has just kind of forgotten about them. And there's a bunch of those out there. And if you have, I guess, like I said, that adventurous spirit in you, you know, you want to find like, it's kind of like modern day pirate treasure.
It really is. And this is interesting because this relates to, some of the other shows that I've worked on here at How Stuff Works. You know, people are really good at losing stuff. It sounds crazy that to think that a group of people could say, we're going to put this time capsule right here. Let's take some pictures, commemorate the day, and then, oh, what? We lost it.
Mm-hmm.
But over the course of human civilization, we have lost entire cities. I mean, let us not forget that the city of Troy was considered to be mythical for hundreds of years until it was, you know, rediscovered. So it's not that strange to think that we could lose a time capsule. I'm going to save the most interesting one for last, but we'll alternate lists so it's not too much of a bummer to hear all of the lost time capsules.
Yeah, because I have some that are still out there that have some pretty amazing facts that go along with them.
And most importantly, Scott, we know where those are.
Yeah, I think most of them anyways.
So this is a weird one. The MIT cyclotron time capsule.
Oh, yes.
Dates back to 1939. So these MIT engineers put a brass capsule beneath a magnet used in a cyclotron. Pretty creative. However, this magnet weighs 18 tons. The capsule is supposed to be opened in 50 years, but they didn't do that. So 1989 came and went. And no one remembered it was there. Everybody forgot. The cyclotron's been shut down a long time ago. And then MIT, when they realized that it was still there, they had another problem. How do you get it out from under the 18-ton magnet?
Yeah, there's a 36,000-pound weight on top of this time capsule. But they know where it is.
Yeah.
They just can't get to it.
That's the lost part.
So no one's really, you know, like, actively trying to get to this thing right now. It's still there. They know where it is, roughly.
Yeah.
I mean, basically. But how is anybody going to do that? How are they going to engineer a solution for this whole thing, if ever?
It's just so inconvenient, in my opinion. There darn well better be some amazing stuff for that brass capsule, because if I have to move an 18-ton magnet to find your postcard where you wrote, like, good luck, 1989, we're officially not friends.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, that's the thing. And a lot of these, you know, these time capsules, they have the stuff that was meaningful to the people that, you know, when they buried it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily have to have any kind of value these days. I mean, it's not that you're doing it for the money by any means. It's more of just a sentimental thing.
Right. Yeah. No, people aren't really hiding buried treasure in time capsules. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes, given the length of time between when a capsule is buried and when it is recovered, things that would have been commonplace a few decades ago become quite valuable.
Well, sure. And that was going to be the idea behind the Belvedere, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that somebody was going to receive a car with 4 miles on it. It was going to be in pristine condition, right?
Yeah. Instant classic.
Yeah. Barn fine condition, maybe best. But, you know, they thought, well, this is going to do nothing but gain value as time goes on. And in 50 mm-hmm. years, somebody is really going to have quite a treasure here. And, you know, that's the same idea when they bury, like, you know, a $100, you know, government bond or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's going to gain so much in interest over the years that, you know, this is going to be worth who knows what. I mean, people can buy a castle, you know, with this money in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't always work out that way, because I think that was one of the other things in the Belvedere car, right? Didn't they bury a $100 bond, I think? No, it was $100 in a savings account.
Yes.
That was going to accrue interest mm-hmm. from 1957 through 2007. And then they said that the amount that is actually in that account now is something like $400. Now, that's four times the money that they put in there. That's great. But, you know, that's been 50 years. And
yeah.
$400 isn't really quite the windfall that they probably thought that it was going to be, you know, 50 years in the future.
That's true. It shows us that people are not the best at predicting what will be of value in the future. You know, I can't wait until, I'm sure there is a few out there, but I can't wait until we find some of those, centennial, not to be opened for 100 years or 150 years mm-hmm. kind of time capsules. Mm-hmm. Who knows what we're going to find there? It's like a bowl of mercury.
Oh boy. Yeah. Something dangerous.
Right. It just may be, but, we do know that there are successfully recovered or waiting time capsules, some of which also have some interesting things.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And I've got another one here if you want to just kind of go down my list here. Sure. I'll do a few at a time. How about
okay.
that?
Okay, yeah.
All right, there's one in Billings, Montana. And the Campfire Girls Adventure Group Troop number 23 buried this one, Ben, and is buried in 1976. It's scheduled to be open in 2076, so that'll be America's tricentennial. It contains a princess telephone, which I found pretty interesting. That's a princess telephone is like that very standard telephone that you would see from the 1970s.
Yeah, on the little stand.
Very, very common.
Where the headpiece is on the little stand.
No, this is just a very basic like a dial face.
Uh-huh.
You saw it in every sitcom. Every household practically had one of these.
Yeah.
It was just a very, very simple phone. There's a digital watch, which that's kind of interesting as
Whoa.
Well. A box of bullets. I don't know why the Campfire Girls Adventure Group was burying a box of bullets. That's interesting in itself.
Is there a gun?
There is not.
It's just a box of bullets.
There are tapes of music and news programs and bicentennial stamps with a 1976 postmark. So in 1976, people went a little crazy with burying stuff, and a lot of these are from 1976. There's another one in Bunker Hill, Los Angeles. Now, this one was buried in 1961, and it was supposed to be open on May 9th of 2011, although the person who wrote this article at Gizmodo said they found no record that anyone has ever bothered to even dig this one up. So this could be another one that's out there still.
Head out there. Get your shovel.
Again, it contains antique telephone equipment, like transistors, solar batteries, and even an operator's headset. So, you know, things that they thought were, for whatever reason, I guess symbolic of the time is what they throw in there. But looking back now, I mean, is anybody going to bother to dig that up with some of this old technology in it? I mean, is it that interesting to people to really go out and seek that out to do that? I mean, it's cool to do it. I get it.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
It doesn't really have any monetary value, or not a lot of monetary value.
Not yet.
But it could be cool to maybe put it in, again, like a museum in mm-hmm. downtown, like there in Bunker Hill in Los Angeles, and put it on display and say that this was, you know, underground for 50 years or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. How about this? How about a place that has lost not only one time capsule, but multiple time capsules? That, my friend, would be Corona, California. They have lost 17 time capsules dating back to the 30s. You know what this means, guys? There's a time capsule thief in town.
That's what it sounds like.
It sure does, because
Serial time capsule thief.
Yeah. They just tore up a lot of concrete around the Civic Center, said the chairman of the Centennial Committee in 1986 when they couldn't find it, which makes, according to the Los Angeles Times, this gives Corona the dubious distinction of being the individual record holder in the fumbled time capsule category.
All right. Now, how about this? I'm going to get to a time capsule that our Car Stuff listeners are going to find exciting.
Yes.
Sort of exciting, maybe.
Yeah.
But I want to mention just a couple others on the way to it. How about that? And I'll
Sounds
do them
good.
Fast, faster than I have been in the past. But you get the idea that these are out there and they're everywhere, right?
Yes.
All right. So there's, let's see, there's one in Crystal Lake, Illinois that was sealed in 1976, supposed to be opened again in 2076. It contains a $1,000 government bond. Not bad. There's a Martin Luther King Jr. time capsule, which is buried in 1988 at Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. It's scheduled to be open in 2088. And that has some personal possessions of his, audio cassettes, and some recordings that people recorded in the 1980s. Let's see. There's also, here's kind of a strange one. English High School in Boston, buried in 1970, but there's no scheduled opening date. So it's just there. They know it's there. No one has a date on it, you know, when they're going to open this thing up.
Mm.
It's said to contain hockey legend Bobby Orr's sweatshirt, and the rest of the items in there are unknown. They don't have like a record of what's in there. But no one wants to dig it up because they don't want to be the ones to kind of spoil this thing that's there, you know, because they don't
Weird.
Know when they're going to do it. I think they should set a date for that.
I think dates are important
and
with this.
Make it 10 years out or something. Just
sure.
do it. All right. So again, more stuff going on, but here's one that I think our listeners are going to find exciting. This is actually the world's largest time capsule, or it's touted as being the world's largest time capsule. It's in Seward, Nebraska, and it was sealed in 1975, and it's supposed to be opened on July 4th, 2025. And this time capsule is actually a 45-ton vault, which contains clothing from the 1970s and over 5,000 other items, other items, including a Chevy Vega car.
Ah,
so here we go.
Here we
back
go.
To the car stuff, right?
Yeah.
All right, so Seward, Nebraska, world's largest time capsule. You can go walk around and see this. You can see right where this is happening in 2025. So how far is that from now? That's like 11 years from now.
Yeah.
This thing is going to be opened on July 4th, and there's going to be a Chevy Vega inside that time capsule.
Oh, gosh, I hope it's in good condition.
Well, you know, hearing what we heard about the other vehicle, now, I don't think this one is underground.
Okay.
I don't think it's underground. I think it's in more of like a big above-ground building, I believe. I'm not sure. Because I've looked at so many photos of time capsules recently, Ben. Some of them are above ground and have a berm built around them.
Right.
Others are just buildings that are sealed. Mm-hmm. Then others are below ground. And then some are just tiny little, you know, like we mentioned, the brass chest. And
sure.
Some are put in statuary, which is kind of weird, I thought. You know, they'll put something in like the head of a lion that sits outside of a courthouse.
Yeah.
And that's to be cracked open, you know, in 100 years in the future. So all different places. But this one in Nebraska, I mean, it's only 11 years from now. Are we going to remember to even think about this when it happens? Or is it going to be newsworthy like the Belvedere was, I wonder?
It depends on what, you know, it depends on what is in there, honestly, what condition it's in. I've got to ask you, though, do you remember we were talking about the sealed cars in the up in the factories in Michigan?
Yeah, I do remember that. It's in Detroit. It's in historic Fort Wayne, which is on the Detroit River in Michigan. I know that's confusing because there's Fort Wayne, Indiana as well. So it's in historic Fort Wayne, and these are what they call the bubble cars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is like it's like a visible above ground time capsule because these cars are perfectly preserved, but they're in these air bubbles, these airtight, sealed, recirculating air bubbles. They're so strange.
And they're plastic, right?
Yeah, it's in a plastic bubble. You can see through them, kind of. They're a little cloudy. But, again, pristine vehicles that are just sitting there waiting for who knows what. I don't know what the end purpose of this
is. Or who owns them, right?
I think the city of Detroit owns them.
Now they do.
Yeah, it's been. I think these are cars that have been donated to the collection.
It's weird because that is probably one of the best preservation methods I've heard for a car. And I just hope that Vega, I hope it's all right, man.
Well, you know, it's not a fantastic car or anything like that, but it was, you know, one guy's idea that, you know, this is part of, you know, who we are right now as a people in the 1970s or whatever. And I'm going to put this in there and it's going to come out in, you know, when, I don't know how many years this was, I guess 1975 to 2025. So it's 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So in 50 years, it's going to come out again. A pristine 50-year-old vehicle that someone is going to find very valuable. Now, in 11 years, do you think a Chevy Vega is going to be worth a lot of money?
No.
It's going to be worth a fair amount of money if it's in good shape and low miles and all that. But it's also going to have dry rot issues. It's going to have its problems.
Yeah.
Just being stored like that. But I think that, you know, this probably will come out of the ground safely. I mean, as opposed to what happened with the Belvedere. Because that was just I don't know. It seems like it was a confluence of events that didn't work out quite right.
I mean, kind of I would file it under an act of God almost, because there's no way you can control for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there's a lot going on there that's wrong.
So, maybe a perfect storm would be a better term. Mm-hmm. So let's do some more lost time capsules, one of which should, interest you guys, or I hope it interests you as much as it interests me. First, a little bit of founding father mystery stuff here.
Ooh.
George Washington's cornerstone. So the idea of burying capsules in some ways comes out of this Masonic cornerstone laying ceremony. So throughout hundreds of years, Freemasons have officiated rituals, which include placing memorabilia inside building cornerstones so you can recover it later. Way back in 1793, George Washington, who was a Freemason, he laid the original cornerstone of the U.S. Capitol. The Capitol has undergone extensive expansion, remodeling, reconstruction, but no one has found the George Washington cornerstone.
That is very, very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, how cool would that be to find that from, what do you say, 1793?
Yeah.
And to know that George Washington himself laid that cornerstone. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been seen since. Now, that's one that has historic value, probably monetary value. It's got it all, right? Intrigue. I mean, where the heck is that thing?
I hope it's cool. I hope it's not like a cigarette and a match.
No, I don't think at the contents of a lady's purse. Remember that? They kind of last minute dumped it in the Belvedere.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it's going to have some significant items in it. It's just what's there. I mean, there's no content list, right? There's nothing that goes along with this.
How much do you want to bet that we don't really even know if there's something in there. It's an assumption, but how much do you want to bet that somebody already took it?
You think so?
Yeah. Are you kidding? Yeah.
I don't know. Or do you think they would take it and then say, oh, by the way, I found this cornerstone?
I think they took it and didn't say anything.
Wow.
I feel like that's within the realm of possibility.
You're kind of transitioning over into your other show duties.
Oh, you know what? You're right. Let me pull it back. Yeah. Although we will get conspiratorial toward the end. So the next one, this might interest you guys, the Bicentennial Wagon Train Time Capsule.
This is so fast. This is maybe one of the most fascinating ones to me.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Yeah. And I'm working off your notes here, Scott. So you actually wrote, you gave this one a star for how intriguing it is.
I didn't want to forget this one. That's why it's got a star next to it.
So here's the idea. We'll make a time capsule, and it'll hold the signatures of 22 million Americans. But on July 4th, 1976, as we said earlier, there's a lot of stuff happening on the celebration of the nation's founding here. President Gerald Ford arrives for the sealing ceremony, and this is in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, only to find that someone had stole the capsule from a van. From an unattended van.
What, this time capsule is just hanging out in the back of a van?
In the Bicentennial Wagon Train.
This all sounds a little shady.
The capsule's maker, the Reynolds Company, had broken the mold. The thief's identity and whereabouts of the capsule remain unsolved to this day.
So get this. Here's what's in the capsule. The signatures of 22 million Americans are in this time capsule.
It's crazy.
And it's stolen. So it's out there somewhere. Someone has this in their garage, in their attic, in their basement, somewhere like that. You know, the thieves, the heirs of the thief, or maybe who they sold it to or whatever. I don't know how this stuff gets traded around, but 22 million signatures from Americans that were supposed to be buried by the president, right?
Right.
And where are they? What's the point of taking that?
Somebody really likes autographs, maybe. I don't know.
How much, material does it take to store 22 million signatures, by the way?
And what would you do with it? You know, Scott, you and I are not very familiar with the underground time capsule trade or the time capsule black market or something. But yeah, why did you take it?
Can I tell you a little side note here?
Yeah.
1976, I was pretty young. I was born in 1971.
Okay.
So like 5 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
Just over 5 years old. And I have a faint memory of going to something called the Freedom Train in 1976. And it was a train that they had painted red, white, and blue. And I don't know if it was like Amtrak train or something like that. And I only know it was called the Freedom Train. I think it was the Freedom Train because I looked it up. And I hope I'm getting that name right. But it traveled all over the United States for that whole year. And it would make these stops in different towns, and you could tour the train. You could walk through the train, and it had relics from, like when the nation was brand new.
Wow.
So, like, old stuff that should be in a museum, but it's on this traveling train that you can walk through, and it had, like 50 exhibits or something like that. And I have just a very, very faint memory. I was living in Peoria, Illinois at the time, and I know that my parents took me to some big event that was like this unusual train that was red, white, and blue. It had to have been that.
I mean, let's look it up because we might be able to do an episode on that.
It must have been that. And, this whole thing with the wagon train thing that you mentioned, happening in 1976, there was so much of that type of thing going on. It was like a historic wagon train that went the opposite direction of the wagon train that they would have gone. They went from west to east in this case, I believe.
Oh, you want to know something weird?
What?
Okay, this is a side note on a side note.
All right.
So on my mom's side of the family, one of the wagons that that side of the family used to get around in the day before cars is in a museum in East Tennessee.
No kidding.
Yeah, they won't let you take it, though. You can't touch it, even if you're related to the people. Yeah.
So you've gone and seen this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I didn't understand because I was younger. Why are we in this museum looking at this wagon? But there's other stuff from my family there too, like swords, all the neat stuff.
Oh, that is really cool.
Yeah, I guess they made the choice that they would put it in a museum instead of, okay, Scott, I'm going to level with you. It's probably a lot of work to maintain a wagon.
I bet it is.
And I don't have the resources nor really the desire to do that. I wanted those swords though. It was so cool.
It'd be cool to have on your, hanging on your wall, but now so many other people get to enjoy them. That's part of the benefit of giving these things to a museum is that, everybody gets to see that instead of just hanging on someone's wall and it's, restricted to whoever, comes to visit you then.
Right. Yeah. Whoever happens to be in the living room or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
or gathering dust in the attic or something like that.
So let's stick with the vehicle tax, because one thing that people may remember from part one of our episode was that the Belvedere is not the only vehicle buried in the time capsule.
Sure. All right, we just mentioned the Chevy Vega, right? Yeah. In this supposed world's largest time capsule.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, this is kind of neat, Ben. And this is kind of I've got maybe two more cars that I want to talk about. And one of them is very recent. And I don't know if you could even call this a time capsule. I'm going to stretch the boundaries of what we call in a time capsule here on this one.
Yeah.
I just read a story that's from this year. It's called Bay King Chrysler in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. All right. So this is a dealership, a Chrysler dealership, and they are the owners of a 1943 Jeep Willys MB, which is a World War II model Jeep.
Yeah.
All right. And we've done a podcast on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool looking Jeep, very, period authentic looking, Willys product. And what they were originally going to do with this brand new dealership is they were going to install it on the showroom floor and then build a kids jungle gym all around this thing.
What?
And allow the kids to kind of play on it and around it and everything, right?
That's great.
I guess it is, right? I mean, but it would probably quickly be pretty, ratted out, pretty trashed, I would guess.
Yeah.
I mean, kids
are
not gentle on stuff like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have decided instead to create kind of like this below ground vault that is visible from the dealership floor. And the way they did that was with a see-through floor,
mm-hmm.
ceiling for the vault floor for the dealership.
Yep.
And you can walk right over top of it, but it's kind of on display right in the middle of the dealership. Now, when you walk in, you walk on top of this Jeep, and it's really a cool thing to look at. I think the inspiration for this was the guy who owns this dealership, his brother, had become kind of fascinated with this article where they're talking about a guy who had a wine cellar in his house that had a glass top on that you could walk over, so you could see it from the kitchen as you walked over top of it. It's kind of an interesting idea, but they decided to do that with this Willys Jeep. And so far, people really seem to enjoy it. I mean, it's almost like a museum display. It's got mm-hmm. gravel on the ground. The vehicle is in there. It's very tight in there. It doesn't have a lot of room. And I think there's a big a Jeep logo on the wall. But it's kind of like it's sort of like a time capsule, but not exactly. I mean, it's not like it's hidden away and you don't know what the condition of it is.
They probably have access to it.
I don't think so. It
no?
looks like, I
okay.
mean, it looks like you cannot drive it out. I think it had to be lowered in with a crane. I think. I mean, I was looking at the, just some photos of it when they were installing it. Again, this is pretty new. But you can look up Bay King Chrysler and, Jeep Willys, and it'll probably come up on a search if you want to do that.
There's something else we should mention as well.
Okay.
This is one that's already been dug up. Mm-hmm. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. So in 2009, a 1925 Bugatti Brescia Type 22 Roadster, which I know you love the Roadsters, right?
I do.
It was pulled from a lake in Switzerland. It had been sitting on the bottom for 70 years. When it was recovered, it was in a similar condition to that Belvedere. This is not so much a time capsule as to show everybody what kind of damage can happen to these.
Mm-hmm.
So it had to sit on a dolly just to be moved because the lake had eaten it so much.
Salt water, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, the car was sold at the Bonhams Automobiles Deception auction. In Paris in 2010, and even then it sold as just this heap of lake jetsam. It sold for $364,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And a number two condition Bugatti had a valuation range at the time about $150,000 to $400,000.
Hmm. Okay, so someone's paying for the story behind this one.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. And I think I remember, are you getting to this part, why it's on the bottom of the lake?
Tell me why.
I think that it was sunk intentionally by the city officials or the government or whoever, because someone had not paid the taxes on the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And this was their penalty, that they weighted the vehicle and they sunk it right in the middle of this lake, knowing that it would never come back up again. It was like a humiliation type of a sentence.
Ooh, that's and like Old Testament style.
It is. And I mean, that hits pretty hard when someone sinks your Bugatti in front of you,
Oh, but, yeah, I bet you had to be there to watch.
What was it, 70 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, you can imagine what 70 years at the bottom of a lake, a saltwater lake, would do to a car. And it is on display. I think they put it on display as is.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right? Maybe at a museum in California somewhere.
Yeah, they did. And so this, I think, is an illustrative tale of what, again, like the Belvedere, what can happen with these cars when they're not touched because as cool and neat as the idea of just burying something like a car for 100 years and then digging it up, as neat as that might sound, it's just not practical with a vehicle.
Definitely not. You know what? I've got one more buried vehicle story that I want to get to, but I think that there's something that we should talk about prior to this because there is something really cool happening just about 2 or 3 miles down the road from us here in Atlanta right now.
Oh, yes. And you hipped me to this.
Yes. This is a really cool thing. And I was talking with Josh Clark about this as well just the other night because I was doing some research here late. Mm. He was also here late and I mentioned it to him. You know, that it was something fascinating that's happening here. And he said that he had already kind of looked into it for the television show that they were on, you know, for the Stuff You Should Know television show.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And, he knew about it. He didn't know a whole lot about it, but he said, it's a fascinating topic. And, he was kind of interested in why we were going to talk about it. So I told him a little bit about the cars, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe some of our listeners don't know about what's happening right here in Atlanta.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Atlanta's own Oglethorpe University is home to the International Time Capsule Society, or ITCS to its friends. This society is also, you'll hear them called the Keepers of the Crypt of Civilization. They were established in 1990 to promote the study of time capsules. So they estimate that there are approximately 10,000 time capsules in the world, but this is the weirdest statistic. They also estimate that no one remembers where 9,000 of them are buried.
You know what I think leads to a lot of this?
What?
I think this is like when the high schools do this, maybe, you know, they bury the senior class.
Oh, yeah,
buries
yeah,
something
yeah, yeah.
And then no one remembers it ever. You know, or, they may think back like we did that, but I don't know where it is. And that just goes away.
Or it's, because, time capsules happen on big commemorative dates, or on founding times, right?
Sure.
What, like the foundation of a building is being laid and things like that.
Sure. Big scale, small scale, it happens all over the place.
Right. And because those buildings are around for so long and often used for many different purposes.
Yeah.
Then the different management and they don't remember this stuff, but.
Exactly right. Now, yeah. But at Oglethorpe University, now they have this, what was it called? The society, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. This, the society was formed in 1990, but this is all based around a time capsule that exists at Oglethorpe University that was sealed in 1940. And it, get this, Ben, it's supposed to be opened in the year 8113.
Right. Which when you told me that, you know, that translates to me very simply as, oh, it's not going to be opened.
8113 is when they want to open this. Now, this is strange. Okay.
Yeah.
There's
why?
There's a huge list of stuff that's buried in there. And maybe we can talk about that in a second, but why the year 8113? Well, here's the idea. And this is called the Oglethorpe Atlanta Crypt of Civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And this is officially, they call this the first successful attempt to bury a record for any future inhabitants. Now, so this is like the birth of the time capsule idea.
Yeah, according to them.
Okay, according to them. I understand that. So the 1940, I think it goes back even earlier because the planning for it started in like 1936, I believe. All right. So here's what happens. There's a guy named Dr. Thornwell Jacobs. And Dr. Thornwell Jacobs, he passed away in 1956. So he hasn't been around for a long, long time. But he's also known as the father of the modern time capsule because of this project. Now, why 8113? Because that's a date that they set back in 1940. All right. The distant date of 8113 AD is proposed because when they first thought of this idea of opening a crypt sometime in the future, what he did was he calculated the first fixed date in history, and the first fixed date in history ever recorded, 4241 BC, and that's when most historians agreed that the Egyptian calendar was established on that date.
Whoa.
Right? So 4241 BC.
Uh-huh.
Now that was 6,177 years between 4241 and 1936 when he came up with this idea, right?
Yeah.
So what he did was he took that additional, he added, you know, that same amount of time, 6,177 years onto 1936. And that's how he came up with 8113.
So there's a method to the method.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you can call it a method. That's
yeah.
Right, because
he's so, the midway point now.
So in 1940, he's saying in nearly 6,200 years, I want this capsule to be open. Now, it's a huge, huge time capsule. It has something like, I don't know. I can't even tell you how many items this has been. I mean,
yeah.
It has has things like
dozens
the,
and dozens.
Yeah, people like the King of Sweden have contributed to this. The Kodak Company contributed items.
Sure.
Books and movies. Oh, the original movie script from Gone with the Wind is in there. Seeds, typewriters, sewing machines, mm-hmm. other high-tech gadgets. You know, high-tech, I'm, again, air quotes from 1940.
Sure. Like a radio, an Emerson radio. Mm-hmm. There have been synthetic fabrics, rayon, an iron.
All of which would have been brand new.
Lincoln Logs. Did you ever play with those?
I did.
Yeah, me too, man.
Yeah, they were very cool. And
all I ever made were cabins, though.
and the other thing is that a lot of that stuff is like very common, ordinary stuff. I mean, they'll be like, shaving equipment.
Sure, yeah. Knife and spoon and asbestos mats, which was back then. That's the kind of thing. They had some mannequins in there, two smoking pipes, wooden forks and spoons, children's toys, a candle stand, everything. And from what we understand about this, you already said, I think, that it's supposed to show in the entirety of what life was like at this time.
That's right. It's supposed to show what life was like in 1940 in America. And, I mean, in 8113, or what was it? Yeah, 8113.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is anybody going to really care about that? Or is anybody going to even know, you know, where this thing is? I mean, what are the records going to be like? I mean, because that's the other thing this place does, this society. They're kind of unofficially known as the keeper of all records. Like, if you bury a time capsule,
let them know.
You can let them know, and they'll get coordinates and everything, and they will keep the record of where that time capsule is, because they don't want any more of these lost time capsules out there.
Yeah, and you have to wonder how irreverent that estimation of theirs is. Like, is it based on data, or is it just a figure of speech where they say, well, they're around 10,000, but no one knows where 9,000 of them are?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I think it's because you can only estimate, right?
It's a little bit of hyperbole.
Yeah, now, there's so much information. If you go to the Oglethorpe University website, and again, this is like 3 miles down the road from us. We could go there and eat lunch and come back if we wanted to. It's
sure.
that close. So it's kind of a fascinating thing. They've got a lot of information on their website if you want to look it up. Now, I got one last thing here, Ben. I know you've got one more thing after that that you'd like to cover.
Oh, yeah.
So this one is another car, and this is another time capsule. This one is maybe a little bit more intriguing for a couple of reasons.
Mm.
We're going back to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I don't know what their deal is there. I mean, I say that, you know, in a loving way, I guess. but what is with Tulsa, Oklahoma burying Plymouth vehicles? Because they have buried a 1998 Plymouth Prowler in Centennial Park in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And maybe what's most intriguing about this whole thing is that a lot of the residents don't even know that it's there. A lot of people didn't really know what was happening when they did this.
When did they bury it?
They buried it in on January 18th of 1998. So this was also to celebrate Tulsa's 100th birthday. So remember, the other celebration was for Oklahoma. This is specifically for Tulsa's 100th birthday. And that was January 18th, 1998. And the idea is that this is going to be open again 50 years in the future in 2048. And it was a car that was donated by Chrysler Corporation. You remember 1998, they were building Plymouth Prowlers.
Yeah.
So they donated this vehicle to this time capsule project in Tulsa. This is prior to them knowing what had happened to the Belvedere.
Oh, no.
But the good news is that this one is an above-ground crypt, I guess, in that it's kind of looks like a building that they've buried under a berm. You know, so they've piled up material around it. So it's not underground completely. And I hope they were a little bit more careful with this one than they were with the other one. The above-ground thing, you know, it's clearly visible. I mean, you can go to Centennial Park in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you can walk over top of it and everything and see the plaque that, you know, denotes when it should be opened in 2048, and hopefully it will come up, much cleaner than the 57 Belvedere did.
Gosh, here's hoping. Okay, so I've got my very last thing.
One more thing.
And Noel, you're going to enjoy this. So you're familiar with the Georgia Guidestones, right, Scott?
I am.
Okay, so for anyone who hasn't heard of this, and I know this is not quite car stuff, but for anyone who hasn't heard of this, once upon a time, a guy using a pseudonym went to Elberton, Georgia, which touts itself as the granite capital of the world, and he requested that they build a very strange monument for him and the people he represented. And this has sometimes been called, like, Georgia Stonehenge or something like that. It has this set of ideas that people are supposed to follow, apparently in a new world, right? Mm-hmm. And it's built to last, and it has all these weird things that Stonehenge also had, like lining up with astronomical data and stuff. And it's in multiple languages on these big, big, big granite blocks. And there's a time capsule under the Georgia Guidestones.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm not sure if they dug it up or when they're supposed to, but there is one under there. I don't know what's in it. Noel did a fantastic documentary, actually, on the Georgia Guidestones, but I don't know if he knows what's in it either. So let's end it on a little bit of a mystery.
Oh, sounds good. I mean, there's so many mysteries like this out
there. Oh, yeah.
But this Guidestone thing, I mean, if you take a look online, you know, again, keyword search, and you'll find some really crazy stuff going on with the Guidestones. But to know now that there's a time capsule there, mm-hmm. as well, or maybe not. Maybe it's already gone.
Yeah, people still don't know the name of that guy. His pseudonym was R.C. Christian.
Hmm. All right. Yeah. Interesting. It's it leaves a lot of unanswered questions.
Well, it's time for you and I to head out and go see what this International Time Capsule Society is all about,
yeah,
right, Scott?
I definitely would like to. I mean, it's too bad they don't have a car in there, because a car from 1940 that's being kept in a supposedly in a controlled environment,
yeah.
like this is, I mean, that would fare well.
Yeah, they have all this stuff except for a car.
Yeah, they do. I mean, there's pages and pages of things that are buried in there. It's really pretty interesting. But, you know, I just wish that Belvedere had come out of the ground a lot cleaner than it did. Imagine the stories that would be circulating now about that. You know, the show circuits and things that it would, you know, where it would travel and how much it would be worth.
Do you think that the Smithsonian might restore it if they got it?
I kind of don't want it to be restored. I kind of would like them to figure out a way to get it there intact, the way it is right now.
And then just preserve it?
Without having to resort to the donor, you know, mm-hmm. the donor vehicle to get it there. What do you think?
You know, I think that I would like to see it driving, but I don't know if it's possible.
I don't think it ever will again. I don't think it's even possible.
It's just those 4 miles.
I know.
It's all it got.
That's it. 4 miles. And it looks, it's deceiving, because if you see it from, you know, a short distance away, it sure looks like it could be on the road.
The outside. Yeah.
It really does. They did a fantastic job getting the rust off of that
thing.
Yeah.
But if you look inside.
Yeah. Remember, as Foster said, there's mud shoring up the panels on that mm-hmm. thing. So it's definitely a wreck.
And we are going to head out. We hope that you enjoyed this two-parter as much as we enjoyed making it. And I'd like to hear your car restoration stories. You know what I'd like to hear, Scott? I'd like to hear someone who was told not to bother saving a car, but they saved it. And I want to hear if you're happy about it or if you think it was a mistake.
Yeah, I bet in most cases it's probably a mistake, but I hope there's some success out there as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it happen before when someone goes into a garage and it's like they're talking to a doctor when they say, give it to me straight. Mm-hmm. You know, how long does it have?
Yeah, I think we've all had that conversation.
Right. So write to us. Let us know your car stories. Let us know if you've been involved in some time capsule stuff. Unless, of course, you stole a time capsule. Let's keep that to yourself.
Yeah. Right? Or if you have those 22 million American signatures, I would like to talk to you.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by that.
That's so weird. What a weird thing to steal. They must have thought there was money in there or something.
Yeah, must have. Yeah, but also, you know, if you've buried one and you didn't think about it until just now, like, oh, yeah, we did that, you know,
in high school,
senior year, we buried one, but I don't know if we ever dug it up.
You could be the biggest hit of your reunion,
awesome.
My friend.
Awesome.
Depending on when you graduated high school. So check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and on our website to see stuff that you won't normally hear during the podcast, or you might not hear during the podcast, and tell us your car stories. Our address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.